It's 12:09 on the John Phillips Show, Talk Radio 790 KABC, broadcasting live from my living room in Palm Springs, California. And it's time to fully reopen the state of California for business. Mr. Randy Wang's at the sports desk in Culver City.
John, we're going to be staying dry in the sky. Southwest announcing that they're going to keep not serving booze on flights till at least 2022, and then they're going to revisit the issue.
You know, every time you go on a plane, there's a fight over something. There's a fight over the masks. There's a fight over what seat you're supposed to be sitting in. There's a fight over whether or not there's enough space in the overhead compartment for your bag. I think everyone would be a lot more laid back if they had a couple of pops in them.
Well, I think the issue that we're seeing with the airlines not serving booze on the flights is everyone's getting tanked at the airport, and then they're punching flight attendants. That's why flight attendants' daily mantra now is...
Is today the day that I get punched in the face?
Well, that's certainly an element that exists. However, I have a different theory. If you're sitting on a plane and you order a Coke, you pretty much just drink the Coke and finish the Coke. And when the ice melts, it's over. Then it's just watered down sugar water.
And then you just have to sit there and make sure that cup doesn't spill on your laptop for the entire flight.
No kidding. And how many Cokes can you drink before you get full? Now, you know me pretty well, Randy, and you know I can sit there on a flight to Dallas and drink scotch after scotch after scotch after scotch.
You've been known to nurse a cocktail or two.
Yes, nurse. I've been to medical school. And as long as you can keep drinking, you can keep the mask off. But I can only have about a half a Coca-Cola before I start to get full and I just can't drink anymore.
And then you're going to burp in your mask, and that's not pleasant for anybody.
No, not at all. So I think it's to try to keep us wearing the masks. I think that's the motivation.
Well, yes, this announcement does come inside with the mask mandate being extended on planes till at least January 18th of next year.
Joy. Well, they'll remove that mandate just in time for my birthday, unless, of course, they extend it again, which is the likely scenario. Randy, today, as I mentioned before, is the calm before the storm. Tomorrow is a big day, not just for us, but for the state of California, as it is the election on the recall of Warden Gavin Newsom.
That's right. Now, ballots have been sent out for weeks now, and people have been able to return those ballots in a drop box or mail them in, or early in-person voting's been around for about a week and a half now. But the election officially ends tomorrow night, and we may know pretty quickly if Gavin Newsom's going to survive this recall or not.
And you and I are going to have a very long day tomorrow. We're not going to be here for our normal hours. We're going to start at noon, which is our normal start time. But instead of ending the show at 3, we're going live and local all the way until 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And then, Randy, we're coming back at 8 o'clock, and we're going to be here from 8 to 9 p.m.
That's right. After the polls close, we'll be here to go over the results and see what happened in the recall of Gavin Newsom.
In addition to that, I've got a TV hit over on the 1st at 7:15 in the morning. And then get this. I get an email from my old employer over at CNN, and they want me to be on their election night coverage later on in the evening. I think it's 12:30 or something like that.
We talking regular CNN or international?
Well, I think it's the same thing. They're simulcasting one broadcast on both networks. So I get this email, and they say, we want you on. And I thought to myself, okay, I can do it, but I'm not flying to New York, which is typically what they have you do on election day. I said, I can do it, but I have to do it from California. And they say, okay, no problem. Red flag number one. I said, am I going to the studio? They said, no, don't worry about that. You can do it from home on Skype. And I thought to myself, my mama didn't raise no fool. I know where this is going. This is going to be another one of those five-on-one panels where they're all in the studio in New York, where they got hair, they got makeup, they got a set, They got lighting. They're going to look like the cast from Wicked.
All you have is shaky Wi-Fi.
And I'm going to be doing the show from a catacomb. So that's what's going on tomorrow for me and for our broadcast here on AM 790 KABC. So we hope you'll be with us throughout the day, and maybe we'll have some results for you at 8 o'clock. Maybe we won't. It just all depends on how quickly they count the ballots. Now, speaking of which, this is an election where ballots went out by mail, and we know in real time who is turning in their ballots and who is not. So far in California, 37% of the ballots that have been sent out have been returned, which means that most of you haven't voted yet. Now, of those ballots, Democrats are turning them in at a much higher rate than Republicans. Of the ballots that went to Democrats, 42% of them have been turned in to the state of California. Of the ballots that went to Republicans, 39% of them have been returned to the state of California. And independents, who are usually the flakiest voters of them all, have returned 29% of their ballots. Now, Randy, what we've been hearing over and over and over again is that the enthusiasm in this election is all on the side of knocking Gavin Newsom out of office, that there's no enthusiasm for keeping him there. Based on the ballots returned so far, that doesn't appear to be playing out.
Well, it was that way, I'd say, up until about mid-July, when this was just a referendum on Newsom. There were some people that were ready to defend him, but most people didn't really care. There were more important things going on. They were going to sit out this election. But then this election stopped being just a referendum on Newsom because of Larry Elder's commanding lead and the way that this race was shaped in the last few weeks. It is Newsom versus Elder, and that has motivated a lot of Democrats to get off their asses and fill out the ballot.
Now, because there are more Democrats than Republicans in California, and because more Democrats are voting as a percentage of their total population than the Republicans, of the ballots that have been collected so far in California, 52% of them are Democrats. The rest are evenly split between independents and third parties and Republicans, which means Republicans are going to have to be turning their ballots in record numbers between now and tomorrow, or voting in person, which is something, by the way, we saw in the 2020 election. Republicans prefer to vote in person. Democrats prefer to vote through the mail. So you know that Newsom is going to have a worse day on election day than he is in the mail. The only question is, how much worse of a day is he going to have tomorrow than he has in the days that the mail comes in with the ballots?
Well, the polls keep going heavily in Newsom's favor. A brand new Emerson College Inside California Politics poll has Newsom beating this thing by 20 points. Vote to keep 60%, vote to recall 40%.
Now, the other question that we've been hearing is that whether or not Latinos will turn against Gavin Newsom, that Latinos, particularly those who live in Central California and Southern California and work in small businesses that have been shut down by Newsom, send their kids to schools that have been shut down by Newsom, and live in neighborhoods that have been taken over by the homeless and by criminals thanks to Gavin Newsom, whether or not they would come out and vote in this election. The numbers so far are saying that's probably not going to happen. When you break down the statewide electorate by race, whites are turning in their ballots at a much higher rate than everyone else. 43% of whites have already voted. The next group that's most likely to vote are Asians. They've turned in 37% of their ballots. Then it's blacks at 35% of their ballots have been returned. Bringing up the rear are Latinos. Only 1 in 4, 25% of Latinos, have filled out their ballot and returned it. Which means if there is a big shift in the Latino community against Gavin Newsom, they're going to have to come out tomorrow. Otherwise, their votes will not materialize because they are not voting at the same rate as everyone else by a long shot.
Yeah, it definitely looks like while we've seen polling for the last 6 months that shows that Newsom is not doing well at all with Latinos, it's more of a, they're not going to go out and vote for him, but they're just going to sit this out. They're not as motivated to vote him out of office.
When you break down who is voting by age, it goes pretty much down the line. The older you are, the more likely you are to vote. 65 plus, get this, 65 plus, 59% of them have already turned in their ballots, which means elderly people in the state of California are voting in large numbers. Now, that could be good for Newsom because the older you are, statistically speaking, the more likely you are to be.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Freaked out by the Delta variant. So if they're freaked out by the virus and they're voting in large numbers, that could be good news for Gavin Newsom.
I'm not surprised by those numbers at all because, as we all know, the older you are, the more likely you are to actually read the things in your mailbox.
Anyone 25 or below says, what's a penny saver? What is this Bed Bath & Beyond you speak of?
There are so many circulars crammed in my mailbox, I've probably thrown away legitimate mail accidentally tons of times.
The group that is next most likely to vote is between 50 and 64. 42% of them have returned their ballots. Then it's 35 to 49. They are 30%. 30% of their ballots are in. And the group that is least likely to vote, 18 to 34, only 21% of them have turned in their ballots. So this election so far is skewing older, it's skewing whiter, and it's skewing more Democrat than the population as a whole. Now, again, I want to repeat the fact that could change tomorrow if Republicans decide that they're going to vote in person. The problem with that is if you get bad weather or there's traffic or there's childcare issues or something happens at work and they forget to vote or they decide they just don't have enough time to vote, a certain percent of those people who intend on voting tomorrow in person will drop off. The question is how many of them will drop off? If you put your ballot in the mail, if you turn it in early on, you know your vote's going to get counted. If you wait until election day, something could pop up that prevents you from voting. And that's what we talked about last week with Mike Gatto, the former assemblyman from Los Angeles County. So that's where the recall election stands today based on the numbers. And this election is ongoing. You can turn your ballot in today. You can turn your ballot in tomorrow all the way up until 8 p.m. in the evening, which is when we begin show number two tomorrow, Randy. From 8 to 9 p.m., we'll be here going over the returns, going over the results as they come in, and we'll have much more on this throughout today's program, including in the Total Recall Hour, which begins after the news at 1. We've got a full show for you. Ann Coulter is going to be here. Katie Hopkins, our friend from across the pond, is going to stop by. And, of course, your phone calls at 800-222-KABC, 1-800-222-5222. Randy, we've got a new poll that just dropped in the recall election.
That's right. It is the new Emerson College Inside California Politics poll. They surveyed 1,000 Californians over the last week, and this poll has Gavin Newsom beating the recall by 20 points, 60 to 40. When it comes to question number two, the leading candidate in question number two, who would you like to replace Gavin Newsom, is nobody with 34%, followed closely by Larry Elder at 30%, which is not surprising at all. But here's what's really surprising. There is a candidate that you and I have never heard of that is beating Caitlyn Jenner, beating John Cox, beating Kevin Kiley, beating Kevin Faulkner, and tied with Kevin Paffrath. There are a lot of Kevins in this race. And it with 6% polling in second place, if you don't count nobody, is San Luis Obispo college student John Drake. He's running as a Democrat, and he's doing just as well as Meet Kevin.
And where is Caitlyn Jenner right now again?
Caitlyn Jenner in this poll is at 2%, which is double the amount of support that she's been getting in most polls, which is at 1% or less than 1%.
That's not surprising. Talk about a candidacy that was supposed to do amazing things that just absolutely blew up on takeoff.
Well, if you're going to run for governor, you need to know exactly what it is, the job that you are running for. And she didn't know that. She just wanted to sell some T-shirts and maybe a back-end documentary to Netflix that so far nobody has bought.
Well, and when you have these short elections, you really need to get down to business almost immediately because you don't have a lot of time. If you run for president, sometimes those elections start immediately after the last election. So you have 4 years to really lay the groundwork and get things going. If there's a recall election, it's not like there's a primary and then there's a general election and you have months or years to prepare. This was a sprint, not a marathon. And right in the middle of the race, she takes off for 3 weeks to go down to Australia to film Big Brother.
But see, the whole point of that, John, was that she keeps her commitment. She keeps her word. She made that deal with Big Brother Australia way before she ever thought about running for governor. And what was she going to do? Bail on Big Brother?
No. Who could do something dishonest in the entertainment industry? I mean, is there nothing sacred?
I'm going to tell you this. September 15th on Wednesday, if you go to your local thrift shop or Goodwill, you're going to see a lot of unsold Caitlyn for California shirts.
You know, I was thinking about getting some of that swag just as a collector's item.
You want to wake up the woke mug?
Well, the problem, though, is if you buy it, that's technically a contribution to her campaign. And the last thing I need is me buying mugs that I can give away for Christmas time that then turns into a big scandal that I'm contributing to Caitlyn Jenner's race for governor. Then I'd have all these Kevins mad at me. See, I knew you're biased. You're giving money to Caitlyn.
And you buy any campaign merchandise from anybody, they're going to sell your phone number and your email address to everybody. Do you know how many texts about the recall I got this weekend?
And what about phone calls with actual people? Have you been getting any of those calls?
Well, I'm under 40. I do not answer the phone for anybody.
You know, I always deliver my ballot or just put it in the mail almost immediately after I get it. I do this in every election cycle, which means if the campaigns are smart, they don't call you, they don't text you, they don't send you mail, they don't do any of that stuff because they know not to waste their time on you. If you voted and they still continue to send you stuff in the mail and they still continue to call you, you know some consultant is fleecing the candidate beyond belief.
It's definitely happening with the Cox campaign.
Absolutely. You know, Randy, there are different categories of people who are being required to take the vaccine. For example, if you get on a cruise ship leaving out of the Bahamas, as I did, they said you have to take the shot. If you are a student at certain universities, you have to take the shot. If you are in the military, you have to take the shot. And you can go down the list. There's a lot of categories of people who are required to take the vaccine as part of the terms of their employment or status as a student, whatever the case may be. There are two groups, I am told, who have so far been able to avoid being required to take the vaccine. And those are members of Congress and the United States Postal Service. Did you see that?
I've seen conflicting reports about the Postal Service thing where I think it's they're required, but because of the Postal Workers Union, they're given an option for testing where other federal workers, there's no option for testing.
And you believe that's just because of the power of the letter carriers union?
Typically.
Okay. I have a different theory on that. I think if there's any group of people you're going to give a pass to, then it's got to be the letter carriers. Because they take so many rabies shots. If you add one more to the list, that's all they're ever going to do is just be a pincushion. There's been much talk about what's going to happen in the state of California should the warden survive the recall attempt. And one of the themes that is consistently discussed here is that he is going to punish us for putting him through this. And we know how he's going to punish us. He's going to shut everything down again. He's going to place more restrictions on us. And he is going to continue to grant himself emergency powers so he can go around the legislature, go around the separation of powers, and rule us like a king.
As we get into flu season, you're going to start hearing this word a lot, twindemic.
That's right. And one of the keys to the warden surviving the recall is making sure students go to school for on-campus instruction. He knew that if we started the fall semester on the computer, that parents would be outraged and they would vote against him. Even Democrats who don't want their kids stuck at home on the computer instead of on campus where they belong. And the teachers' unions didn't want to go back to work. And Newsom was put on the hot seat because he didn't want to go against the teachers' unions, but he also didn't want parents to be furious with him and blame him for the lack of an education that their children are receiving or aren't receiving. So he had to walk a very fine line by giving the teachers' unions a lot of what they wanted, but requiring them to come back in the fall. He gave them over a year off at home. He gave them safety precautions and testing requirements and more money and everything that you could imagine.
Don't forget the free childcare.
Oh, the free childcare. Very important. Defunding the school police, you name it. However, don't for a minute believe that the teachers want to be back at work, specifically the unions and the union leaders. They want to go back to doing it on the computer and working from home.
Who wouldn't?
Absolutely. You can do it in your pajamas. You can have Maury on in the background as you're teaching kindergarten. And I have long predicted that if the warden wins the election, they are going to go back to doing school on the computer. And they need a way to do it to where it doesn't seem like they're shutting the schools down. It's just a little temporary thing. It's just a mitigation effort. It's just a precaution because we're all about the safety. Listen to this. This is a tiny little story that went absolutely nowhere over the weekend. But this story is the ghost of Christmas future. And it comes out of Fresno. There is a gentleman who is the executive director of Fresno State Institute for Media and Public Trust. He's the former executive editor of the Fresno Bee. And before that, he was a longtime political journalist at the Fresno Bee. So this is a guy, his name is Jim Boren. He covers California politics, or at least used to. And then he rose through the ranks, went into management, and now works for Fresno State. Here is what he said. President Saul Jimenez Sandoval says Fresno State is, quote, discussing plans to shut down after Thanksgiving. Students will travel outside Fresno and interact with more people during family gatherings, so the semester may end on Zoom, which means instead of going to school until December the 23rd or whenever it is that they cut it off for the winter break, school is going to end in late November. They're going to call it quits. Because they believe the students are going to go spend Thanksgiving with their family. They're going to go to Christmas parties. They're going to go to Hanukkah parties. They're going to go to various work parties. And they're going to celebrate with other people. So therefore, the fall semester is going to end early at Fresno State. If that happens at Fresno State, what do you think Cecily Myart-Cruz is going to ask for at LAUSD?
Oh, that's going to be one lovely six-week winter break.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Santa will be very good to Cecily Myart Cruz this year.
Our learning spaces are special places.
And then what do you think the teachers union in San Francisco is going to ask for? And then what do you think the California Teachers Association is going to ask the warden for? And, you know, cold and flu season starts in the fall, but it doesn't end after the Christmas break. It goes through January and February and into the spring. So what do you think the odds are they're going to say, our cases are through the roof? You can't expect us to go back to school in January after all of these kids were around their parents at Christmas and they were around their friends on New Year's and don't forget Thanksgiving and everything else. How do you expect us to go back to work? Oh, no, we can't go back in January. You need to extend this through the winter and take us into spring, and then we'll consider coming back to work. They are already laying the groundwork. And if there is one part of California I wouldn't expect them to go for this crap, it's Fresno. And that's where they're starting. So if you're sending your kid to school at a public school in California, whether it be K through 12, a junior college, a university, whatever the case, put this story in the back of your head. This is what's in their mind. This is what they're working on. And if it happens in Fresno, it will happen elsewhere too. For an update on Bay Area bums, here's Randy Wang.
Residents of Japantown in San Francisco are about to deal with what we've been dealing with in Venice and parts of the San Fernando Valley. Hotels that got turned into temporary homeless housing during COVID are now getting bought up by the cities, and they want to turn them into permanent supportive housing. Imagine a permanent homeless shelter.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.
In your neighborhood and what that would do to your property values. And the residents of Japantown have said enough of that.
Let's listen to the residents of Japantown tell the bum sayonara.
In San Francisco, a battle is brewing over a plan to turn a Japantown hotel into housing for the homeless. The neighbors are so upset that the city is now slowing down plans and reevaluating. NBC Bay Area's Chrissy Smith has more on this fight.
In Japantown, neighbors say they're just starting to see tourists return after the pandemic. For much of the pandemic, the Kempton Buchanan Hotel in Japantown was used as emergency temporary housing for the homeless. Now the city is looking at buying the property and making it permanent supportive housing, and that has the neighborhood crying foul.
I wonder how much cheaper the building got after what the homeless people in the temporary shelter did to that building.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure the TVs are there, unmolested. I'm sure the towels are in great condition. No holes in the walls, no lice. I'm sure it's a place you'd want to spend your vacation at.
It's kind of the perfect scam here. Okay, so COVID happened. We're going to pay you, because nobody's traveling right now, to put homeless people in your hotels, completely temporary. And then when the reputation of that hotel in the neighborhood goes down the toilet and your property values sink, we're going to buy that place for a song. In fact, wasn't that Mike Bonin's entire strategy?
Oh, yeah. He wanted to make sure that you turn the motels into such dumps that no one would ever want to be willing to pay to stay there, so that you could buy them for pennies on the dollar and put the homeless in them.
Now the city is looking at buying the property and making it permanent supportive housing, and that has the neighborhood crying foul.
Whether we like it or not, taking away this hotel with its potential to bring in visitors will further destroy what fragile economy we have left in Japantown.
Dean Ito Taylor is executive director with API Legal Outreach.
We kind of resent the characterization that's been put out there that this is a Japantown versus the unhoused issue, and it's much deeper than that.
He says there are historic concerns too.
The background here is a history of displacement, a history of tearing our community apart. So this is not an issue that is trying to pit one vulnerable community against another.
I do love when local officials try as hard as they can to say, it's not that we hate the homeless.
Just be honest.
It's that we hate the politicians that put the homeless in our neighborhood. That's what it is.
No, well, you can hate them, too. You hate the fact that there's going to be used syringes out in front of your homes. You hate the fact that there's going to be human feces out in front of your homes. You hate the fact that there's going to be 900 cars that don't operate parked out in front of your homes. And you're going to get mugged and your property's going to get stolen. And you're going to have all of the problems associated with mental illness and addiction being put literally right in your face.
The tension has gotten high enough that the city now says it's slowing the process down.
I want to be really clear that I think that permanent supportive housing would be a benefit to a neighborhood.
Supervisor Dean Preston represents Japantown and wants to ensure that the community is heard.
I would like to have as many as possible in the district, but it's also about being respectful of the fact that losing a tourist hotel in Japantown, one of two tourist hotels, will have an impact, and we need to engage honestly.
I do love the concept of residents are furious about this. You're going to destroy our economy. No one's going to want to stay here. Okay, well, we're still going to do it, but we're going to wait 2 months so we can say we had public comment.
He's not even doing the pump fake of pretending like he cares.
This supervisor says, hey, I put up as many homeless shelters as I can, as many as they'll let me.
He's Mike Bonin North.
With the Japantown community and with the workers who could lose their jobs.
He suggested two other possible locations as conversations continue. The city.
How about Alcatraz?
Treasure Island? There's a couple of those islands there off the coast.
The city had proposed buying four properties, including one in another district, where the supervisor says neighbors seem to embrace the idea.
Is an opportunity to really stabilize a population that might not otherwise have access to housing. We're doing it all over San Francisco.
In San Francisco, Christy Smith, NBC Bay Area News.
And down the coast in San Jose, they're also having problems with their bums.
Yeah, but these ones, it's more about the temperature being risen all across San Jose because the homeless are starting fires left and right.
It was one fire after another Sunday afternoon in San Jose. Around noon, flames burned through a vehicle and personal possessions at a homeless encampment near the San Jose airport.
By the way, you could tell the fires are so bad because this reporter sounds stuffed up the entire time.
She sounds stuffed up, and I hear the crackling fire in the background.
By 2 p.m.,
like it's Christmas time.
By 2 p.m., a second fire at a nearby section of the encampment flared up, sending a column of thick black smoke into the sky.
That's how it's said. These are people's homes right here.
This man was out grabbing a bite to eat when a neighbor called to tell him his tent and belongings were on fire. He came back to find everything he owned was incinerated.
I'm signed up, hopefully, with the...
Can you get fire insurance if you have a tent on the sidewalk?
Maybe they sell that at REI, too.
I'm signed up, hopefully, with the city or home for or whoever is doing the housing. You know, hopefully this can accelerate things because... I need some help right now.
San Jose Fire contacted the Red Cross to assist him and others displaced by the fires.
We come to this area pretty frequently because there are a lot of people here and, like I said, a lot of vegetation. We'll be working to see if we can figure out what the cause of it was today.
Scott,
I'll tell you what the cause of it was because we see at least seven of these a day in Los Angeles, and I'm sure it's no different in San Jose. There are disputes within the encampment, and for some reason, the number one resolution to fix a dispute between residents of a homeless encampment is to set the other person's tent on fire.
See, if they were smarter about it, they'd do that and then blame PG&E.
Scott Largent, a homeless advocate who lives in his RV parked at the encampment, says the city has flyers out warning some people in the area they'll need to move soon. He thinks that's changed the atmosphere among people turning here for shelter.
So you see right here, you must remove all of your property from this location.
He says people are following the orders given last week to vacate their space and believes they're moving into other areas of the encampment and clashing with people already settled in.
People get territorial out here in a way, and it's like they're sandwiching more people together that are not used to being around each other. That's why I think this stuff is happening.
So the encampments are encroaching on other encampments.
If I lived in Japantown, I'd buy fire insurance right about now. All right, we've got two more hours coming up on the John Phillips Show. It's the Total Recall Hour coming up in moments. We've got Ann Coulter. We've got Katie Hopkins and your phone calls at 800-222-KABC. It's the John Phillips Show on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say. Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time. Yep. Excuse
yes,
me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.